Around here, fall plots usually go into the ground around the beginning of September, which means right now is when decisions get made. And Whitetail Hill is who I would call before making those decisions. Like, literally call them. That's one thing that we love about working with Whitetail Hill is you can get a real person on the phone by call or text who will look at your situation, your soil, your shade, your goals, and tell you exactly which blend to plant and how to plant it. If it's the first plot you've ever put in, they'll walk you through the whole thing before and after the sale. And the seed they'll set you up with is good stuff. It's premium germination tested blends with zero filler. And their seed blends are built in Alabama, so you know it's going to handle southern conditions. So don't guess your way through another planting season. Go to whitetailhill.com/southern and use the code Southern for 10% off. And if you're not sure what to plant, ask them. Again, that's whitetailhill.com/southern and use that code Southern for 10% off. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com. All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes, or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
National Forest grows bigger deer than WMAs.
I actually kind of disagree.
What do you think is the like big buck ingredient list when it comes to a piece of public land?
Limited gun hunting.
Yep.
Limited gun hunting. I think limited gun hunting, at least in the Southeast, allows a deer to be able to make it.
Yep.
And get past some people in order to get age, which by getting older has a chance to fully express himself to be the biggest he's ever going to be. And also, if you look at kind of some of the record books, some of the best deer get killed on public land, at least in Alabama, it's on some of this state ground, not the federal ground.
Welcome back, everybody, to another Q&A edition of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Jacob, how you doing over there?
I'm doing great. Listen, guys, like I said last week, we're even 1 week closer. Mobile Hunter Expo, August 14th through the 16th. I know y'all hear the ads on the podcast, but we are extremely excited about this year's show. Hope to see you guys there, Dalton, Georgia, the Dalton Convention Center. Again, August 14th through the 16th. Y'all come hang out, learn from some great hunters. Come see us. Some decent guys to try to interview up really good hunters across the country. And really love to see you guys at the show. So, got that coming up. Appreciate everybody's been joining Circle Circles. Again, been popping off for the last few weeks. Got some other really good Circle questions and hot takes that we're going to be answering today. If y'all are interested in joining Circle, all you got to do is scroll down to the bottom of the page. Whether you're listening to the podcast or watching it, in the show description on the episode, there is a link on there to join Circle. Click it, come join, come hang out with us on Hunter's Hangouts, or make some posts, leave some comments, leave us some questions, and even better yet, leave some hot takes, like we got some good ones for today. So thank y'all for watching. Let's jump on into this episode.
By the way, on the Mobile Hunters Expo, I've been getting some questions lately about Bobby Worthington and his books, where you can get them. I know that they were through Osseo Gear for a while. I don't think Osseo is still selling those. I think that Bobby mail orders his books now, but I know you're going to be able to get them at the Mobile Hunters Expo. He was selling them there last year. I'm pretty sure he's going to be selling them there again this year. So just for everyone asking, I've gotten quite a few messages about that lately, because we've done several episodes with Bobby, and everyone's wondering about his book. And his book is one of the best deer hunting books I've ever read. It's very good. It's definitely, like, informationally, like, learning-wise, it is top notch. So yeah, y'all go see him at the Mobile Hunters Expo. He's gonna be speaking on Saturday. All right. let's get started. Again, these are from our Circle group. First up, we've got Nicholas Crittenden. Hot take, National Forest grows bigger deer than WMAs. I believe National Forest gets less pressure than WMAs. I think they get burned and logged more often, and normally they are bigger contiguous chunks of land. Agree or disagree?
I actually kind of disagree. That's why it's a good hot take. And I think this is very relative to where in the country you're at and how everything's managed. Because at least, I want to use Alabama, for example, our home state. A lot of the WMAs will have spikes of hunting pressure. And when I think of hunting pressure, it's not bow hunting pressure. Bow hunting pressure is typically never big enough where I feel like it's a factor for getting a lot of deer killed in the state of Alabama. But for gun hunting, which that's what majority of everybody in Alabama does is gun hunts. We have such a long season. WMAs have it set up where you have certain, typically 2 to 3 day long hunts, mostly on a weekend or extended weekend, where you can actually hunt with a firearm. On National Forest, when gun season's open, you can go out there and hunt anytime you want. Also in Alabama, not all of our National Forest, but a couple of the National Forest in Alabama, in certain sections of it, you can dog hunt. Again, additional pressure as well. And killing some deer there. So I actually feel like your best odds of growing a deer isn't necessarily always on the vastness of land on National Forest. A lot of National Forest are managed decently well in Alabama. They cut, they burn a lot of them, and they manage that timber. Where some of our WMAs don't necessarily do that. But the WMAs, wildlife management areas, state-owned ground, because of the limited extensiveness of hunting pressure, where it's broken up, at least with gun pressure, seems to allow deer to be able to survive and get some more age on them as well. And also, if you look at kind of some of the record books, some of the best deer get killed on public land, at least in Alabama, it's on some of the state ground, not the federal ground. Federal ground is great to hunt, like hunting some of the federal ground. But yeah, that's one of the reasons it's a hot take. Not everybody's going to agree with it.
Yeah, I disagreed also. I think that typically WMAs produce bigger bucks. And I think a reason for that is kind of like you're saying, the limited gun pressure. But also, if you look at a lot of national forests across the Southeast, a lot of them will have a management area inside of it where it's owned by the federal government, but the state manages at least the hunting on a part of it. And usually within that national forest, that WMA is where a lot of big deer come from.
And that's where some of the better hunting is, on that WMA.
Yep.
From a quality standpoint. It's not always true, because you can find big deer in national forest, no doubt. But if you think of, especially, we're going to keep using Alabama, for example. I'd love feedback from other people in other states.
Yeah.
But also, typically, it seems like where some of the federal ground is, like for where national forest is located, is typically... it's always, at least typically, it's in less desirable locations of a state than where some of the state federal, where the state managed ground is.
Yeah.
It's not always true, but if you look at it in Alabama, we have some state ground that's in very highly desirable
parts of the state.
Parts of the state.
Yeah.
For quality deer, where national forest is not really in those areas. Like, there's a little crossover, but it's not necessarily the actual, you know, the case. But yeah, especially when you start looking at WMAs or inside national forest, those WMAs typically, they have the best success of killing big deer on those WMAs versus national forest.
Yeah.
But that might not be the case everywhere. So I'm real interested in kind of seeing that. Because also when I think of big national forest, I think of like Florida. They got some giant ones down there. Arkansas as well. North, you know, Georgia's got some really big national forests. A lot of southeast states have at least pockets of a lot of national forests. And I'm wondering, especially when I think of Florida, I think of dog hunting. And this is because they have a big dog hunting culture down there. And some of those big national forests get hunted like crazy by dog hunters. Still, deer make it and survive. And every now and then, you know, they'll kill some deer that at least make it to social media. There's probably a lot of deer that don't make it where people don't post about it. And they're probably smart to do so. But you see some deer that get brought out of some national forests that's pretty impressive. But even, I'm thinking of other parts of Alabama where you've got national forest, you got WMAs, you've got all kinds of hunting allowed on that place. And again, even there, including dog hunting, even there, the state managed ground produces the bigger bucks, at least that you see and hear of.
Yeah.
There might be some on national forest, like I said, that kind of keep hush hush about it.
What do you think is the like big buck ingredient list when it comes to a piece of public land?
Age.
Like, well, no, I mean like regulation wise.
Limited gun hunting.
Yep.
Limited gun hunting. I think limited gun hunting, at least in the southeast, allows a deer to be able to make it and get past some people in order to get age, which by getting older has a chance to fully express himself to be the biggest he's ever going to be. Sometimes it's not always like deer's going to turn to Boone Crockett buck. Probably not going to ever happen. But he might be a really nice 130.
Mm-hmm.
He might even hit 140, maybe. And so parts of Alabama, there's deer that get bigger than that on some of that state ground. They get killed every single year, but they're hard places to hunt, and they don't have a lot of gun hunting opportunity. Like, you can gun hunt it, but again, it's a short window of time throughout the season. There's only so many of those long weekends you can gun hunt before season's over.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably one of the magic aspects of it. It's like, I feel like the gun hunting, and also it depends on how rugged it is. A lot of state ground has a lot more road systems in it for whatever reason. Some of the national forest, like you'll have tons of national forest roads, but you don't have, it seems like you don't have quite as many drivable roads off that. You don't have a lot of gates, but like on a lot of WMAs, it's like, dude, you can drive all over the place.
Yeah.
And then you got gated roads that you can just, if you want to ride a bike down, you can ride a bike down and go anywhere you want.
Yeah. I feel like on a lot of, well, when you look at it too, I think it has a lot to do with just how big the parcel is, whether it's a WMA or a national forest, which most WMAs or refuges or whatever the case may be, they're just not usually going to be as big as a national forest. But what you get when you have a really, really big chunk of land is, I feel like overall it's lower pressure just because of the hunter density. But I don't think that necessarily translates to bigger bucks, kind of to your point, what you were saying earlier. Because you can gun hunt it all year, at least in Alabama, that more of those deer still get killed. Now, if you're on a really, really big piece, it might be a little bit easier to get to a place that truly is low pressure, where there's probably still people hunting it, but it's not getting just hammered every single weekend or anything like that. Where on a WMA, they're typically a lot higher pressure. There might be less people that hunt the WMA, but it's a smaller area. And one thing we learned a long time ago is, if you think that you have some secret honey hole on public ground that no one knows about, dude,
it's not true.
It's not true.
Nope. Yeah, it's funny. Everybody thinks they have a honey hole, and you just probably don't know the guy that's hunting it, but someone else knows the exact same spot. It's probably hunting killed deer there.
Yeah. So. Yeah, even one of the spots that I hunt, that big buck I've got on camera on a piece of public somewhere in the south, we put one video of that deer up like 3 years ago on Instagram or something, and over the years I've had several guys come up to me and be like, hey, I've got that same deer on camera, and they're hunting the same area. And it just goes to show that, like, especially when a deer is old and big, like, people are gonna know about that deer. A deer can't get that old without being known about. I think, especially with trail cameras, like everybody using trail cameras and whatnot. Even if you're in an area that's pretty low pressure, there's still going to be people that know about that deer. It's just a matter of whether or not they can get age on them. So that's what people look for. Like if you're looking for a piece of public that's going to have better quality, better age class, it really just comes down to the gun hunting, you know. Even if it's a small parcel, if it's bow hunting only or bow hunting mostly, you're just going to have older deer there.
Yeah. Also, I mean, there's other factors too. I think, like, for whatever reason, you just have certain counties that on public and private just produce higher quality deer. And if one of these WMAs or national forests, rarely you have a national forest in that same county. Sometimes you do. But sometimes you have WMAs in those same counties, and those WMAs, some of those WMAs are some of the best ones in the state from a buck quality standpoint. And I say buck quality, it's not just age structure, but like truly overall size, antler size of a deer, you know, come from those best counties.
Also, to Nicholas' point, I know he's in Alabama. I'm almost positive he's here in Alabama. And he's talking about how the national forests are managed better than a lot of the state land. And in Alabama, that's the case, but I think that's changing because Alabama's buying more of our WMAs. And a lot of the WMAs that the state was leasing and did not own are gone.
Yes.
And so the ones that they do own and they do manage are managed very,
very well.
Very well.
Very well.
They do a great job. Now, you go to other places, specifically up and down the Appalachian Mountains, those national forests are not managed very well at all.
Yep.
They need to fire up a skidder and cut some trees.
Yeah, it's very much relative to the state you're in.
Yep.
Just because it's federal doesn't mean they're all managed all the same.
So. Yeah, Alabama's really kind of unique with how our forests are managed. I shouldn't say like kind of unique because Arkansas, we've been through some national forests in Arkansas that are kind of managed the same way.
Mississippi too.
Yeah, in Mississippi, where they do log. They don't usually clear cut a ton. They usually do a lot of select cuts and savanna cut type things, and they do a lot of burning out there, but that's not the case everywhere at all. So I don't know. It just depends. Yeah, it's managed better, but again, even with the management, it really comes down to just having age on the deer.
Mm-hmm.
So depends on your gun hunting, man. Let's move on. On that same subject, kind of on the hunting pressure. This one is from Chris Jones, our buddy Chris up in South Carolina. He said, "Club pressure versus public pressure is a night and day difference." So. What would you define as club pressure versus public pressure?
Let me tell you about my experience. I've talked about a lot over the last year. The club I was in last year, which I'm not back in that club again.
It's not a good experience.
First off, it's in a really good county.
Yep.
It is adjacent to some public land that I've hunted for quite some time. That's always produced really good deer. It has the whole making, like the setup of, if you wanted to get in a club to shoot some big deer and have a good camp atmosphere, it was this hunting club.
Mm-hmm.
Until I found out once joining it and actually hunting there, how much pressure on a daily basis, didn't matter what day of the week, which not all clubs are like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because your clubs are not like this. Our club, because I joined your club now, it's not like this. But that club, there's a lot of members in that club that had a lot of time freedom. Not even necessarily retired guys. Just guys that had their own business and did their own thing. And they would be out there, and they've hunted that place for a long time, like 15, 20 years. And they would be out there on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Whatever day of the week, there was 7 to 8 people checked in at one section of the club. I don't know what they were doing at the other ones.
That is pressure.
Yeah, because I was hunting one section. This club was broken up into different parcels. It was like really 3 big parcels. Well, on the one parcel that I had the most experience around, that was the one I was hunting, any day of the week, you'd have, especially early season wasn't like this, but when gun season opened and during the rut, December and kind of even trickling into January, there were 7 to 8 guys a day hunting on this one parcel every single time. And that one parcel is probably 2,800 acres. So you can spread out, but it's like just repetitiveness.
Yeah.
Guys diving into this area. And it blew me away because I was thinking, you know, a lot of guys we talk to, we've had guys on the podcast who are like, man, hunt clubs are a lot more pressure in public. Well, I'm used to like some of these like gun hunts, specifically gun hunts. Bow hunting is not that bad. But gun hunts where like you get 400 or 500 people on a weekend showing up to WMA and they're all going to hunt. And you're like, you don't necessarily run anybody, but like you know, there's trucks. Like you notice some trucks. well, on this parcel, this club, because we did, since we do this full time, I'm like, I can hunt a little bit during the week. It shouldn't be that bad. No, every single time. It felt like I was going back to one of those WMAs and hunted, but it wasn't just on a weekend. It was every day of the week, which was, it was crazy. And the deer caught on. Deer knew what was, knew what we were doing. It made it where it hunted even more. It was, the deer were even more uptight than even on some of the WMAs. Because the thing about W, like some of our state ground we've hunted, the first day of your gun hunt is one of your best days to kill a buck, in my experience. Unless you're hunting and using pressure to your advantage. That first day, they ain't been hunted. They haven't had really guys out there for 5 days, okay?
Yep.
Pressure's relaxed. We've had a podcast on that. I can't remember who it was, but how deer would kind of go back to their normal patterns after like 2 days or 3 days after hunting pressure. So they're back to normal on that first day. Mm-hmm. So like, if you truly had a pattern, knew where a buck was at, your best chance to kill him was on that, that first day of that gun hunt. Second day of the gun hunt, if you knew where a lot of guys were hunting and they were pushing deer, you kind of use that to your advantage. That never happened on the club because there was always people out there.
Yep.
So they stayed super worked up and, I mean, literally in the hardest to get into areas possible the whole season, at least the whole point of the rut. And it made it pretty challenging. But, yeah, the pressure was unbelievable in the hunting club.
I feel like one big difference between what I've seen and the two clubs that I've been in the last 5 or so years and the public that I've hunted, whether it's federal ground or state ground, is the how the hunting pressure is kind of distributed. Mm-hmm. So, like, you take a national forest, for instance, if you go out there on any given Saturday, there's kind of people all over the place, and that pressure is kind of spread out evenly. Whereas on a club, the pressure on my club is very concentrated. On the last two clubs I've been in, there's guys that hammer specific spots and they're there every weekend, but they're always in one little area. And there's always big sections of the club that aren't really getting hunted. That doesn't mean that the deer act normal in those sections of the club. It just might mean that they kind of get pushed in there and that no one's really messing them up right there. So they're adapting to that hunting pressure. But in a club, it's just a little bit more predictable. Like you go out to, you know, so-and-so WMA on a gun day on Saturday, there's kind of people all over the place.
Yeah.
Just blanket. It's very dispersed, and there's guys in the woods. There's not a lot of guys actually sitting on food plots. They're down in hollers. They're sitting in saddles. They're sitting in little bowls and thermal hubs and power lines and all kinds of stuff. Whereas on the club, a lot of those guys are going to be concentrated to ladder stands and shooting houses. So it makes it a little bit easier. I don't think the club is lower pressure. I think it's easier to avoid the pressure, though, on a hunting club. That's just my take. But
I think it's easier because of how that club's set up to the club you've been in now, where you're pinning out on a unit and you're not pinning out like to an exact stand location, because you can kind of spread out from everybody. If someone's in that unit, it's like, okay, you know, they've got that 40 acres, 60 acres, 100 acres of themselves. I'm going to go to another unit. So you're not as harassed. Cause like some of that stuff, when they got stands within eyesight, you know, a few hundred yards from each other, that like you're sitting and you're like, oh, I see that dude's there. I'm here. And it's like, as long as you pinned out on a spot, as long as you couldn't sit off the backside of a food plot. You couldn't instead of pinning out on a shooting house, someone was in the shooting house, you couldn't pin it off on the backside of the food plot.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go hunt 100 yards from those people. But yeah, it was not predictable. I mean, it's predictable, like certain guys had their certain stands. It was also you show up and they're like some random spot pinned out way. I'm like, what? Okay. Like, and then you find some of those stands and you're like, this is a great rut spot. But where you're sitting, I know for a fact the wind is swirling like crazy. And then you talk to the guy, I'm like, oh, yeah, man, I got some big deer on camera. I got this buck on camera, but I can't ever catch up with him. He's always not there when I'm there. I'm like, I wonder why. Sitting there in a freaking wind vortex as the wind's swirling.
Sitting down in the toilet bowl.
Yeah, because I'm like, I've hunted that spot years ago and back when it was public. And, yeah, you couldn't hunt that spot. You got to get way higher up in elevation and try to look down into it.
Yeah, I know pretty much where you're talking about, I think. All right, let's see here. Moving on about hunting shows. This is from Sam Brown. He said, most popular hunting shows aren't the best resource for learning how to hunt, especially for new hunters, and are much better enjoyed simply as a form of entertainment. What do you think?
That's probably true. I mean, there's stuff you can pick up on it, but like I'm looking at it for the lens of someone who's hunted for over 20 years. I could see that be the case for like someone brand new, like super green, watching like any hunting show and either having preconceived notions or really not getting a full picture of what the guys on camera are actually doing.
Yeah.
And how they kind of work into an area and like what the thought process was. Where they just try to go find something that looks similar to it and they kind of just don't find the actual sign, or they find something that looks pretty good, but they're not getting the full picture from like a learning experience. So, I mean, I think that's probably applicable, but like that would be something that I would have to really ask someone who's, I'm going to say, graduated from like a new hunter, like brand new to like been doing it for 4 or 5, 6 years and they're actually having some success and getting their opinion on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I could see how maybe it's more, a little more distracting if you're trying to watch something like that to truly learn, but you're just not getting a lot of information out of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that certain ones are probably better than others at actually learning some information from.
Yeah.
Because I've talked to a lot of people over, at these shows over the years, like at expos, who will name X, you know, whatever YouTuber that they like to watch, and are like, man, I've learned so much from that guy. And it can help you. It depends on where you're at with your hunting, but it also depends on how they structure their videos and how much of it they show, like what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. There's definitely stuff you can glean from it, especially if you listen to a lot of these podcasts and you hear people talk about certain things, mm-hmm. and we don't do a lot of in-the-field content right now,
mm-hmm.
And then they can go watch one of those videos and someone might mention, you know, whatever the case may be, like, oh, we're down in a thermal hub right now.
That's, well,
yeah, no. You know, or something like that, and then they're like, oh, that's what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're hunting on the edge of this bedding area, and they see what the bedding area looks like. So it can kind of help you connect the dots a little bit. So, but again, I kind of agree, like, you need to just watch it for entertainment, but there's still things you can glean from it. You just can't watch it and try to think that you're going to go out there and copy what they're doing and be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, you're not getting the full picture. And being on the other side of the camera and trying to film that stuff in the past, it is so hard. It is so hard to film a hunt and like really show the full thing, like what you're talking about, like really walk through like why you're in a spot and all the little things that kind of led you there. Cause like that guy who's hunting, he's got a gut instinct that he's kind of going off of too, that just doesn't manifest itself in the video really.
Yep.
And you can't really put that into, it's hard to put it into words and whatnot. So there's just a lot there. That's why you can't try to just go out and like, oh, this guy was hunting a spot that looked like this, I need to go hunt a spot like that. It's more of like, why are they doing this? Why are they doing that?
Mm-hmm.
What does the sign look like? What sign got them excited that they showed on camera? Those little things you can glean from it. I think it'd still be helpful.
Yeah.
One thing we talk about with almost every guest on this show is map scouting. My favorite map scouting tool is LiDAR. If you're unfamiliar, LiDAR is basically like a 3D scan of the Earth's surface. I like to say it kind of takes away all the surprises. LiDAR is now available on OnX Hunt on their topography map. If you go to your app right now, click on the topography map, you can flip on that LiDAR feature and boom, it's gonna come on and you're gonna see what I'm talking about. The LiDAR is gonna allow you to see things that are normally hidden from view. This might be ditches, bends in creeks, rocks, old roadbeds. I personally love old roadbeds because deer like to walk them. They're great places to find scrapes. They're great camera locations. And you know, before, an old roadbed or an old logging road might be something that you kind of happen upon while you're out scouting or hunting. Well, now with the LiDAR, before I go into an area, I can turn on that LiDAR and I can see exactly where those roadbeds are. Even old logging roads from the 1930s, you can still see them on there. So that allows me to go straight to those spots and check them out. It's just an incredibly helpful tool, and it's available now on OnX Hunt. And hey, if you want to get 20% off your OnX Elite membership, you can use the promo code Southern. Like I said, it's going to save you 20%. Go check out that LiDAR feature. You'll be glad you did. Know where you stand with OnX Hunt.
Y'all have heard me say it a bunch over the years, I love having a diversified freezer. Obviously, we eat a lot of venison around our house, and if I can have some fish in the freezer, maybe some small game, that's even better. But the truth is, I still eat plenty of beef, and I like having really good beef on hand without having to make another trip to the grocery store. That's one of the reasons I've used Omaha Steaks. They help me keep my freezer stocked, and when we decide we want burgers or steaks, I already know I've got the quality meat ready to go. Everything comes individually vacuum sealed, so I can pull out exactly what I need instead of having to thaw a whole pack, just like how I do with my wild game. And it's consistently really good. It's like going to a really nice butcher without having to go to a really nice butcher. One thing I'm really excited to try is their Burger Perfection Flight. So they've got burger made out of all these different cuts like ribeye, filet, New York strip, brisket, and sirloin. And I've had the brisket burgers before and they are excellent. And the cool thing about the Burger Perfection Flight is you can taste the different cuts, the different textures, and kind of get a feel for everything at once. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. See site for details.
Deer season is nearly here, and football is back, boys. And whether you've been betting for years or you're just looking to get on a little action on some games, MyBookie is where you should play. That's what's great about MyBookie. You can find the action you want and bet it wherever you are when the game kicks off. From the tree stand, hunting camp, or on your break at work, MyBookie's there for you. And if you're new to the club, the Bet Back Bonus gives you protection on your first play. Sign up with our promo code SOUTHERNOUTDOORSMAN, all one word, then opt into the Bet Back Bonus and take your first shot with a safety net. If your first wager loses, you'll get it right back, no questions asked. Football is finally here. Get in now, cash in on this season with MyBookie. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.
All right, this is a good one. This is going to get us going. This is from Blake Willoughby. He said, hot take, roadbed / right-of-way hunting does not show woodsmanship. That ought to get y'all going. All right, what's your take?
I'd say partly true, 100%. I would say part, talking about being a hot take, not all, because we talked about this on the podcast, so anyone doesn't understand what he's talking about, we're talking about like roadbed hunting. We've talked about on the podcast, like guys like Scott Seals, and something that I've been really implementing, where you're finding a stretch where deer cross into like a thicket, and on like a closed roadbed, like on a, especially like on a hunting club or even on public land, or a little, like, not even quite a logging road, but like just an old, a roadbed that goes through and set up and catching the deer come across, sitting on the ground and get a shot opportunity. You can definitely go in blind and just do that and probably have success. But I guess the one aspect of some woodsmanship is, why would you hunt one over another? And it's not always because like one looks better. Same thing, like when he's talking about right of way, like a right of way would be like a power line, a gas line, something like that. Is there any other examples? Power line, gas line? I mean, that's like the most common ones down here. But is the scouting aspect or walking it and figuring out like what section you would want to hunt? Because if you have, like a power line is a great example. You got a mile stretch of power line you want to hunt. Why would you sit one over the other? I'm like, yeah, you just kind of like work your way down and like, oh, I see deer there. I'm going to walk down there and I'm going to sit there next time. But actually, like, scouting it, looking for sign, looking for the best cover on both sides that's going to make, like, where a buck's actually going to cross, or where you have a really good oak fight on one side and a really good pine thicket or something on the other side, and you find sign that correlates with that. And setting up on that, that's where a little bit more of the woodsmanship aspect of it. But really picking what spots based off conditions and based off specifically sign reading of, like, why you'd want to hunt it. I would say it's kind of some of your woodsmanship aspect. But yeah, you could definitely not have any woodsmanship and just be like, oh, I heard Jake talk about hunting closed roadbeds or right-of-ways on the show. I'm just going to go out there and sit and kill a deer doing it, no problem. Absolutely. And didn't take anything other than you going there and sitting down. But some of the best ones you find are the ones that you actually have to pick apart and figure out, like, where's my highest odds of chance of catching this buck, especially if you're running cameras in there and you know he's crossing it, where he actually is going to be using it that I can set up and get a shot opportunity at him. So,
yeah, Blake, I completely disagree. I don't agree with this at all. Because on what basis is it not woodsmanship is my question. Because you could just go out there and just sit like a random roadbed and get lucky.
Yeah,
you could go sit a random ridge point and get lucky.
Yeah. I think that's kind of where he's talking about. I think it's more like, oh, you're just going to go sit on a road cause you can see far, you can shoot far. And that's what you're getting. Same thing with the power line.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably where he's getting at it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get that, but again, it's knowing what part of that right of way, what open stretch that you need to be watching, because mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of straightaways on power lines, gas lines, roadbeds where you can sit and not see anything, mm-hmm. or you might see a doe or something every once in a while, which I know because I've done that a lot in the mm-hmm. past. But it's knowing which areas are going to produce the best based on the cover that's there, based on how the terrain lays out, but also which ones a buck is going to most likely choose. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, you can go out and you can sit blind and have some success and you might get lucky, but mm-hmm. you could also go sit a random saddle and get lucky. You could go sit in a random bowl and get lucky, a random ridge top or whatever. There's a lot of places you can just go sit and get lucky, but the woodsmanship comes in when you're breaking it down and you're dialing it in of like, okay, this is where a mature buck would walk, whether it's a rut or whatever, and he's going to cross right here for this reason, and you dial it in. Because on any given place, like I said, on my club, on the local WMA, whatever the case may be, there's a lot of straightaways you can sit and watch on roadbeds, but there's 90% of them, 95% of them, you could sit there and watch and you're not going to see a deer.
Yeah, you're not going to find tracks or trails or anything crossing.
Yeah, exactly. So it takes a little bit of homework. You can get lucky, but it does take a little bit of homework. But it is lower barrier to entry. I will give them that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the complete opposite would be like, I'm going to go try to hunt a buck's bed. And like, yes. I get in there, I'm like, God bless you, have fun with that. but yeah. Very effective way, but yeah, it takes a little bit of groundwork. And even like I said, like you could sit one spot. Really, the fastest way to spot check and see if it's even worth time is looking for trails and tracks crossing. Mm-hmm. And then any sign of any sign adjacent to that roadbed that's on a trailer track. Like,
boom, there's your woodsmanship right there.
Yeah, scrapes and rubs and everything. But also, it's like you get lucky. I mean, we met guys before, like a buddy that we stay at when we go hunt down south sometimes. Mm-hmm. He's like, dude, you get you a stretch of roadbed, you see 500 yards, he's like, you kill you a big buck on that. And that's so true. You can't.
100%.
There's no woodsmanship. It's like, I can see it's a long stretch of a roadbed out there I can sit on. Mm-hmm. If you have the capacity to shoot and you get enough time to get a good range on it or take a fast shot and be efficient with it, absolutely, you can do that. And there's no woodsmanship with it. It's just the know-how of, hey, that would work. And I've done it. And I know people who do it for a long time. But yeah, you can get a lot more in the weeds of everything, for sure.
All right, moving on. This is from Lane White. He said, hunting a mature buck at the right time is more important than scent control. You can try to fool his nose all you want, but if you're there when he isn't, it doesn't matter. So timing beats scent control. Agree. I mean, for sure.
Yeah, I don't think it's a hot take, but it's a strange take. I'll say that. That's an interesting take. Timing beats scent control. Because, like, I go back to scent control. Like, if it gives you confidence, do it. If you're like, oh, I'm thinking about trying it, probably don't worry about it. Learn how to, you know, set up accordingly. And get your entrance exit route down. That's the hardest thing, I feel like. But yeah, it goes back to like, gosh, we talked about this on last week's episode, but the whole idea of like, man, if you're hunting during the rut, that's when a blind squirrel can find an acorn, okay? Blind deer hunter can find a buck during the rut. It's just if it's a buck that you want to shoot. It's the great equalizer is rut hunting. But yeah, it's interesting. It really throws me off. Like, it's so, like, out of left field, like, just that phrase. Is it a hot take? Maybe. To me, it's not, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I don't think it's a hot take either.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I don't really mess around anything at all with scent control. It's just trying to play the wind.
Yep.
It play it accordingly.
Yep. Timing beats everything.
Yeah.
Timing beats everything, for sure. It goes to show how many guys we talk to that don't do any scent control and don't even care about the wind. All they care about is the timing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just going to go to their best spot when the time is right and hope they don't get winded.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it works every year for them.
I will specify for that as well. Most time when someone's talking about that, they're typically gun hunting.
Yes.
Just for clarification. Man, I'll be able to shoot super far. Maybe it's like 100 yards, 80 yards, 90 yards, but they are gun hunting 98% of the time.
I don't know. Maybe not Jamie.
I know Jamie. That's the only one I can think of.
Yeah.
That doesn't. That's what I'm saying. Of 800 people, not 800 people.
Jamie McKay is who we're talking
Jamie
about.
Jamie McKay is the only one that he's like, if the time's right, I'm going to go in.
One of the best deer hunters in Alabama.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
I'll die on that hill.
Yeah, phenomenal.
All right. This is kind of an interesting question on through the Circle Group and also at the Deer Expo this couple weeks ago. Been talking to a lot of people about what the bucks are looking like this summer so far. It's been a big subject on this podcast all summer, is the big mass crop that we had last year. Had a huge mass crop, a lot of acorns on the ground, ton of food, And then we've had a very nice wet summer as well.
Mostly. I have learned it is in pockets. There's a lot of pop-up showers. It was really wet for a lot of the state for a while, but like when we were getting rain earlier in the summer, Southeast Alabama was not. Dry as bone. But yes, a decent amount of us have had some decent rain this summer.
So at least average rainfall for most people this summer.
Good browse. Like tons of green vegetation, browse the deer are going to be able to feed on heavy this summer. So
it seems like the bucks are doing really well this year. We've had some people checking in, sending trail cam photos in, and it just looks like the antlers are looking good this year. Deer look healthy. They look fat and happy.
Also because of the heavy mass crop last year, a lot of them got an extra year of growth because they didn't get killed.
Yep.
The harvest numbers are down all across the Southeast. Probably most likely due to heavy mass. Deer weren't showing up on food plots. They weren't showing up on corn piles. So they made it.
So this is an interesting comment from Trey Fowler. He said, the deer here in South Carolina were dropping early last year, talking about dropping their antlers. They may come out of velvet earlier than usual this year due to that, just a guess. So I don't know if there's a, I've never heard of that before, whether or not they come out of velvet earlier. I feel like it's always been very consistent when I've seen them come out of velvet around here, at least. So I don't know if that's the case or not, or I don't know if they drop earlier, if it gives them a little bit more time to grow or something like that.
I don't know. I mean, all I just know is dropping antlers, testosterone plummeted for them to drop those antlers. So I don't know if that's going to cause them to lose velvet quicker, but hopefully they had good nutrition last year, good nutrition this summer, and you see a little bit more of a more than typical increase. That's what we're talking about. Talking about bucks looking good is like maybe a little bit better than typical antler growth.
Yeah.
Year over year is kind of what we're talking about. And just because, again, the abundance of high calorie mass last year and then decent wet summer this year. So.
Yeah. We're at that time of year right now here in Alabama with our January rut. We're behind a lot of the country when it comes to not only the rut, but antler growth.
Antler development, yep.
Antler development. So, like Caden, for instance, he's up there in Illinois right now, and he sent us all these velvet deer that are, like...
framed.
Yeah, it looks like they could shed velvet tomorrow. They're not going to, but... So, when bucks are growing antlers, they throughout most of the summer, they're putting on inches and everything, and then when they kind of get their rack, it hardens for a certain amount of time before they shed velvet. So they're kind of done growing and then it's hardening. And right now, what I've noticed with the bucks I'm getting on camera is they're framed out. Like their main beams and everything are framed out. They've got all their points. They might throw some more, like a G4 or something like that if they're an 8-point. But now it's the time of summer. And we were talking about that buck we had on camera a couple years ago that you named Steve, the 10-point.
Mm-hmm.
And we got him on camera in early August, or it might have been late July, and he was framed out, and we got him on camera again like 15 days later. It was like around maybe August 15th to the 20th, and the length he had put onto all his tines was significant. Like we were like, holy crap, we couldn't believe it. And we're kind of getting into that stage right now where now the bucks I'm getting on camera are their beams are formed out, and now their tines are hopefully about like half of what they're going to end up being. We'll see. Maybe not quite, or they might be a little bit more than half, if you know what I'm saying. But we're at that time of year where they're framed out, and over these next couple weeks you should see what they're like really going to end up looking like, which I'm excited about because I've got some on camera that are already real nice, and I know that they're in that tine length phase of the summer, so I'm pretty excited about that. I don't know if they're going to shed velvet early. I don't know if that matters or anything like that, but man, we've been getting a ton of rain lately. It absolutely stormed at my house this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Dumped a ton of rain. So much rain, I was afraid the boat was going to sink. it didn't, thankfully. The bilge pump worked.
Bilge pump coming clutch.
We've had problems with the bilge pump lately, so I was a little worried when I woke up. I was like, oh, this is not going to be good. But yeah, I'm real interested to see what that comes out to. All right, next up, this is from our email. This is William Altman.
Which, by the way, email, you can submit, if you're not a Circle member, you can join Circle, but if you don't want to, or it's not in the cards right now, you can still email us questions on our website. Got a brand new website up and running. We talked about that last week, but got a brand new email, or brand new website. You can go and send us an email. It's kind of broken down because it's not we don't have it set up as, it's just the info email. We don't have like the Q&A form yet.
Not
so
yet.
We're working on that. But you can just send us an email, you know, talking about question for the podcast, and we will answer those on the podcast. So this, so what's this gentleman's question?
All right, so William said, just joined today. I was wondering about rubs. I found quite a few rubs last year hunting in Maine where I live, but haven't noticed any scrapes that I'm aware of. I may have missed them, but what would that tell you? So he's only finding rubs. He's not finding any scrapes. And he's in Maine, too, which is interesting.
Whew,
way up there. Way far away from the south. But
he swapped some deer hunting for some turkey hunting.
Hey!
Finding a bunch of rubs, but no scrapes. We've had people talk about that, like writing questions before, mm-hmm. where, like, they couldn't find a scrape on a property. All they were finding was rubs. I'm trying to think if I've ran across that. We've seen that on some federal ground that we've hunted before, where like scrapes were like in pockets, like you just didn't find a lot of scrapes unless you're in very specific locations that you can miss. If you're just walking a ridge or something, it'd be nothing but rubs.
Yeah.
Gosh, I feel like someone recently wrote in a question kind of on that same topic. But what I would say is, like, just typically, like, you're just, sometimes there's overlap and you just find a place that has a lot of scrapes. Mm-hmm. But like, we've had other people write in and talk about just not finding a lot of scrapes on a property. But there's not, just because you got deer there doesn't mean there's always going to be a scrape.
Yeah.
But, and again, I don't know if he's on public land or private land. Did he mention? Yeah. So if he's on one of those big paper company grounds that you can hunt up there with a permit, there's scrapes there. There's probably in a location that's a little bit harder for you to get to.
Yeah.
Or they're just not showing up. Or also they just pop up. The ones that aren't getting used year round, the little rut scrapes that pop up just during like pre rut and getting into the rut that young bucks are working. You just be on one of those logging roads and they just disappear. Because I know plenty of spots I could take somebody to that I'm like, you won't even find a look, like what you would, could tell is a really good looking branch right here. But if I brought you back in here the second week of December, this place looks like someone came through with a rake and made scrapes on this whole logging road.
Yeah.
And it's just probably $2 coming through there. Open up all these scrapes because they're a little frustrated. And they don't ever show back up again. So
frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Sometimes you just... There's just areas that don't really hold scrapes, and sometimes that's partly due to what the ground is like, I think. Mm-hmm. This past year, I was up in Vermont, so I wasn't quite all the way up there in Maine, but I was close. And we took a family trip up there to see my stepbrother. He lives up there. And I brought my dogs along, and me and my wife and my daughter went bird hunting for a couple days while we were up there, up in northeast Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And we tromped around for, I don't know, 3 or 4 days on a bunch of different ground. And we were finding deer tracks. We found rubs, found a bunch of moose rubs and tracks. That was kind of cool. I did not find a scrape the whole time I was up there. And one thing I noticed about hunting up there was it was very rocky, like very, very rocky. Where you would be walking through the woods and it would be leaves everywhere. Like, it just looks like the woods. But when you're walking on them, you feel rocks under your feet. Like, the whole ground is just rocks. And you twist your ankle in them all the time. And I just never located a scrape anywhere up there. And I think that's one of the reasons why, is there just wasn't a great place for them to make a scrape. There's probably licking branches around, like you're saying. That's a lot harder to find when there's not a nice scrape underneath the ground to make it obvious.
Yeah.
But it kind of goes back to the whole licking branch thing, where when you're walking around through the woods and you see trees, limbs coming out that are at that good licking branch height, about, you know, chest high on you, look for limbs that are snapped and hanging down at a 90-degree angle. Because even if there's not a scrape on the ground, they might be using that licking branch, and that might be a telltale sign where, again, if you're not going to find the scrape on the ground, they might still use that licking branch. Look for that snapped-off limb at a 90-degree angle, pointing straight down at the ground. And if you run cameras, put a camera on it. You might get some deer on it. If that is the case, I don't know what part of Maine you're in. I've never been to Maine. I don't know what the ground's like. But if it is that rockier ground, like what I'm talking about, you might go lower in elevation down to some of your creek bottoms where you got a little bit more dirt, and look for scrapes in locations like that. Or, you know, it could be that, like you said earlier, they might just be in little concentrated areas and you've just been missing them so far.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the concentrated areas I'm thinking of, Because again, you kind of dealing with a little bit more rocky conditions, and you just got to find a spot that's got a bit more soil.
Yep.
And that's where you're going to find a scrape. And some of those spots are hard to hunt because they're in a weird location. That just sets up weird access and the wind swirling and everything. But that's what I think of. I think of that. And then also I think of, depending on what part of Maine, maybe deer numbers are not that high, and you're just looking for those pockets of where those deer really congregate and spend more time and find the right soil where they can actually work the ground a little bit, and then you'll find scrapes there. But
yeah.
Or it could just be so thick in certain areas. I ain't been in the Maine woods. I know they do some logging up there, but they don't have very long growing season. But if it's like brushy thick, it's hard to find a scrape sometimes. Mm-hmm. If it's not on a logging road and you're trying to beat and brush the whole time and you can't see that good, it's hard to find that licking branch and that scrape that's, you know, 40 yards off to your left that you just can't see because it's too brushy.
Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and when you find those rub lines, I mean, it can be helpful just following those rub lines and those trails. If you find a good heavy deer trail and you just start following it, odds are eventually you're going to find a scrape. Because typically you find, especially big scrapes, you're going to find them at really good trail intersections. And that's the case whether you're looking on field edges, you're just walking around in the woods, you're walking the edges of bedding areas. Usually where there's a scrape, that is a confluence of deer travel routes where there's an intersection of trails, and that's why that scrape is right there. So if you just go start following around trails, you'll probably run across one eventually.
Yeah.
Which again, the trails can be kind of hard to find in that brushy, rocky kind of cover. But if you're finding rub lines, you know, follow those. If you can find trails, follow those as well. And you'll probably come up with one eventually, but sounds like you're on the right track if you're seeing that much buck sign around. All right, this one is from Dan Austin. This is good. A country boy is blessed when he has the three G's: a good God whose grace is sufficient, a good gal to love and live with him, and a good gut pile signifying you had a great and successful hunt. I'd say life is good.
I like that.
I like it.
I like that a lot.
That could be a t-shirt.
Yeah, that'd be good.
The three G's, three G's. Man.
No, that's perfect. Well, that kind of wraps up questions. Again, if y'all have questions, of course, like I mentioned earlier, you can email them or you can join Circle and leave them down in some of our posts, because we'll make a post about once a week, just kind of getting questions from people. And if anyone has any hot takes, can get those submitted as well. I'm excited because we're like, at this point, by the time when this episode comes out, we're a week out from Mobile Hunter Expo.
Yep.
So it's coming up very, very soon. Talked to a lot of people at the World Deer Expo a handful of weeks ago in Birmingham, Alabama, about the Mobile Hunter Expo. It seems like a lot of people, even like last year, we heard a lot of guys are trying to go for the first time. This year, I've heard from even more people, more listeners of the show, saying, hey, I haven't gone yet. I've heard y'all talking about it. I'm really excited about going, checking out. It's worth your time. And also, I was telling guys, it's really nice, especially if you're married and even have some young kids or something, you can bring them. It's kid friendly. You can bring them to the show. But also, you're really close to Chattanooga. So if spouse doesn't want to come and hang out at the show, there's stuff to do. Like Dalton's a cool little mountain town, but Chattanooga's really close. Go spend the day in Chattanooga. Go to the aquarium or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
But it's an interesting spot in Georgia. You're up there in the mountains. And it's worthwhile.
I talked to a lot of guys last year who used it as almost a pit stop going to the mountains, where they'd stop in at the Mobile Hunter Expo, but they had their wife with them or their kids, and they would go on from there to like LJ or Dahlonega or something like that, and go have a little mountain vacation with the spouse. That'd probably be a good thing to do before we all start hunting this fall, and you know, be good to spend a little family time before fall gets here.
Very true. We got that going. Also, dove season's coming up, which I'm excited about.
Man, I was about to say, I am more excited this year for small game than I have been since I was probably a kid. I'm so excited to not only do the dove hunts. We planted that dove field, which was nightmarish, but it's looking pretty good. Yeah. I think we're going to kill some doves on it. And I'm just excited to go squirrel hunting, dude. Now I got squirrel hunting buddies. Thomas will go with me. So we're going to go and we're going
to... I told Thomas I'm going to go this year.
He says that every year, people. He says it every year and he never goes with me. Ever. You went last year with Dempsey because we had dogs.
Oh, it was awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. I was just telling Mike a minute ago because he's got that Ruger 1022 he just got. And I was like, man, it's two different styles of hunting, obviously. Like still hunting, slip hunting for squirrels and dog hunting. And I like both of them. And the slip hunting is... just you in the woods. It's peaceful. It usually feels pretty good in the mornings when you get out early. It's not crazy hot outside. Get to listen to the woods wake up. You sharpen your stalking skills. You kind of get tuned up to the woods. You start finding feed trees before they really start dropping. Because where the squirrels are concentrated feeding, that's going to be good feed trees in early season for deer.
Yep.
And it's just a good time. Like, you're just out there slipping around. It's peaceful. When you take a dog, it's time to get some meat.
It's fun.
Dude, you're out there to get some meat.
Listen, I'll be honest. It is just slap fun with a dog.
Yep.
I love it. I'm getting a squirrel dog at some point. I mean, I've already had that conversation with Emmy for 8 months now. Typically, when we're squirrel hunting with a dog, we're hunting with shotguns, which isn't the best for meat consumption. No, do a little bit more damage. And
it's a little harder to skin them.
Yeah, it makes it tough. But it's a blast. But yeah, we got small game season coming up. Thomas needs a bunch of small game meat for the hunt kitchen. So he's going to be focused on that. But like, dove season's coming up. I'm super excited about. And really just dove hunting. I've got a couple different shotguns I want to take out there. I was joking around Dempsey. I'm going to get me a little gun rack out there. I can take like three guns with me. And I'm just going to sit there and have like three of them set up on it and just like try to rotate through and break a couple of these older guns in. So I think the newest gun I'll have sitting on that rack, I gotta find the rack that I'm thinking of. I have it in my mind, I've seen them before, will be from like the 1980s. It's gonna be like from like 1911 to like 1980s is what's gonna be sitting there on the rack. It's gonna be kind of cool.
Nice.
So
what are the shotguns, can you name them?
I've got a little, it's not a, yeah, I've got a 19 made in fashion 1915 20 gauge side by side made in Belgium, from a company that doesn't actually exist called International Armories. It was a mail order hardware store shotgun, but it's really pretty engraving stuff. Got that. Got a 1911 made Sterling Fox 12 gauge side by side. If you got a mid-1930s Remington Model 11, as people call them, the Remington A5 Browning. It's not a Browning, but Remington bought the patent from John Browning to make the A5, which is called the Model 11. I've got one of those I want to take with me. And then a 1976 Remington 1120 gauge. Which I've shot that gun a bunch last year squirrel hunting. It was awesome.
Dude, I love the Remington 1100.
Yeah, we got that. I've got an A5 12 gauge. I don't have a 20 gauge, but I got an older A5 12 gauge that I might would like to take out there too. It'd be really good. Anyways, just have a few of them right there. Just kind of rotate through. Well, I'll do that and we shoot like seven the whole time. Yeah, just slow down. I'm like, brought them out here for no reason, but. It'd be super fun.
Yeah, man, it's gonna be a fun year. You gonna go squirrel hunting with me and Thomas?
Yes.
Are you really?
Maybe.
Dude, we got the spot, man. I know. We got the spot.
Thomas getting all excited. He's gonna need more than eight. He's gonna need a bunch. He's gonna need an absolute ton of squirrels. He needs to go over to Oklahoma or wherever you can kill 25 or something in a day.
Yeah.
Do a trip.
Yeah.
Try bringing back 100 4-day hunt.
Yeah, you know, I would love that. So the spot me and Thomas went to last year, it was me, Thomas, and my buddy Colton. And we went in there, and I think me and Thomas were shooting 22s, Colton was shooting a 20 gauge. We're all hunting separate, though. And that's so fun to me because that's how me and Colton grew up hunting, is squirrel hunting together. You walk in together, but you split up, and, you know, you go to this holler, I'll go to that one. And you hear your buddy shooting, you're like, oh, he got one. So now you're like looking even harder. You're like, ah, I got to get one. I got to keep up with him, you know? And I can't remember how many we got, but it was in the low 20s. We almost hit a three man. Only one of us didn't limit out.
I think you said he killed 22 and limits 24, I think.
Yeah. I think Colton was too shy of a limit or something like that. But when you get that many squirrels, and we were all done by about 9:30 in the morning, so before it got real hot or anything like that, this is hunting in September, we were all done pretty early and got back to the truck. When you kill that many squirrels slip hunting them, that is a good area for squirrels. I cannot imagine taking Dempsey up there with a dog.
With a dog.
It would be crazy. First of all, it'd be exhausting because it's not flat at all.
Yeah, but Ruby would lose her mind, dude. That'd be awesome.
How many did we kill with Dempsey last year?
I had a sack full in my vest.
Wasn't it like 18?
Yeah.
But we only hunted for like an hour and a half, maybe.
Yeah, it was like maybe two hours.
And that is the difference between slip hunting them and hunting with the dog.
Well, there's a bunch of them that got away. We couldn't get it. They'd go in a hole or something.
Yeah, and it was cool. It was interesting kind of seeing how that all played out, too, with him running the dog, because it started real slow. It was an afternoon hunt, and he's like, squirrels aren't down yet, and it's harder for the dogs than the squirrels aren't down, meaning out of the trees, foraging around on the ground. Mm-hmm. And it was slow for a while, and that last 30, 45 minutes, it was just one after another.
It was like all the way up to sunset just shooting squirrels, dude.
Yeah, till we ran out of legal light, we had to go catch the dogs.
Yeah, we had to catch the dogs and hike way back to the truck. Bushwhacking a little bit. I was like, man, we're going to get caught out here in the dark, which we pretty much, I mean, it was moonlit by the time.
Nobody had a flashlight.
No.
Not a flashlight between the
four of us. I didn't think you needed a flashlight in a squirrel hunt.
Yeah.
I was like, but I didn't realize we'd get that far from the truck either.
Yeah. Man, that was such a fun hunt. And that's cool, too, because early season I like hunting them, slip hunting. Because a lot of people don't like hunting them when the leaves are on.
So he doesn't like hunting the dog until it gets cold because snakes.
Of course.
I mean, he had a buddy down there, had three dogs bit in the same week. Three different dogs get bit
by
timber rattlesnakes. I'm like, yeah. That's another thing. When you're hunting with a dog, you're running a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Like, dog goes, you know, I almost said dog go on point, but he ain't on point.
On tree.
Yeah, he's treeing. That dog trying to climb that tree, dude. And you go running up to him. I'd like it to be a little colder so I have a less chance. If I do run across a snake, he's a little more docile.
Yep.
He ain't getting tagged. especially like where we were hunting, dude. You couldn't see your feet half the places we were hunting.
Oh, yeah. All the cane thickets. Yeah. Yeah, early season, I like it hunting when the leaves are on, because you can really stalk up on some squirrels and you can hear them from a long ways off, and they're in the trees a lot more.
See, if I do that with you guys, I'm definitely getting those snake gators that I think Scott Thompson put in the circle group.
Oh yeah, those look nice.
Company out of I think it's out of Texas, because if it's early, dude, as much as I'll be looking at the tree, I'm looking at the ground, like double check what I'm about to walk on before looking back up. I don't know, recently I've become more and more worried about freaking timber rattles.
You're scared of everything. My goodness.
Listen.
Scared of his own shadow, guys. Lord. The good thing about slip hunting early is you're going very slow. Mm-hmm. You're never running at squirrels,
mm-hmm.
right? So the snake threat is not very high. And also, you're just not typically going to see a snake out in the middle of nowhere. Like, they're going to be in certain areas. You know where snakes are. Like, be vigilant. You got to look out for them. But generally speaking, you see something, you're like, that looks snaky. We need to be a little bit more careful. And usually you're not going through any thick brush or anything like that, especially where me and Thomas are going to be hunting them. So it ain't bad. It ain't bad at all. But it's hard to hunt them slip hunting late season when there's no leaves on the trees, because when they're on the ground, they are very difficult to stalk up on. Very difficult. You don't have any cover. And when they're up in the trees and they're running and they're primarily getting their food off of the limb, mm-hmm. whether it be a hickory nut or an acorn or whatever, they're running out to the end of a limb and they're pulling it off, and then they're running back to the trunk and they're sitting there and eating it. Well, when they're doing that, when they're running out onto the edge of the limb and trying to find a nut to get, you can walk right up to them. I mean, you got to be a little bit careful, but you got to wait until they're preoccupied. Like, you never try to move on them when they're sitting there eating.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can get really good at stalking and slipping and being quiet and knowing when to move, when not to move. And it translates very well to deer and turkey hunting.
Yeah.
Late season, it is really hard to do because they're mostly on the ground and they're getting nuts that have fallen to the ground or nuts that they've stashed. And man, when you got open woods and that squirrel's like 80 yards away and you got to get a little closer, it is hard to do it. That's the test. That's how you know whether or not you're good.
No, just cut that dog loose. And let that dog burn the woods down.
Let that dog eat, boy.
Yeah, dude. I'm telling you, that's fun. God, it's so fun.
All right, we need to get a poll going in the comments. Y'all let us know if you think Jacob's actually going to come out with us or not. Everyone drop their opinions. This will be probably the third or fourth year in a row Jacob's like, yeah, I'm going to go with you guys. Never does. Breaks my heart.
Yeah, I like the dogs. I like the dog work. This is fun.
It just likes the air conditioning.
I like the cooler weather. It's nice. Yep.
If you get out early, it ain't hot.
Yeah.
If you hunt in the mornings.
Where y'all go, it's a pretty long haul from my house.
Oh, there's plenty of good squirrel places close to you. We'll go find some over there. Take away all your excuses.
Sounds like a better idea. I like that. But yeah, it's got small game season about to start kicking off. Heck, half these states, there's so many states in the Southeast, they're small game season. You can hunt in the summertime, and then going into August, got stuff already opening up. I think Tennessee's got a crazy long, Kentucky's got a crazy long and early squirrel season. But that and getting ready, we're not quite at the time. We still got, well, God, we still got 45 days probably until fall food plots are even kind of being thought of, at least where we're at. But some people are going to start doing that, getting, ordering some trees from a Whitetail Hill, chestnuts and everything, getting ready to plant this fall and this winter. But other than that, Mobile Hunter, like I said, Mobile Hunter Expo, Hunter's Hangouts going on every single week on Circle. Those have been going great. Love seeing new faces on there. Kind of talked about that last week a little bit. But come join Circle, hang out with us and on one of these Hunter's Hangouts, whether you can join and talk or you just want to go and listen. But other than that, anything else you got? Nope.
No.
Well, appreciate everybody watching the podcast. Thank y'all for listening. We'll catch you back here in the next episode from the Southern Outdoorsman. And remember, guys, y'all stay Southern.
Around here, fall plots usually go into the ground around the beginning of September, which means right now is when decisions get made. And Whitetail Hill is who I would call before making those decisions. Like, literally call them. That's one thing that we love about working with Whitetail Hill is you can get a real person on the phone by call or text who will look at your situation, your soil, your shade, your goals, and tell you exactly which blend to plant and how to plant it. If it's the first plot you've ever put in, they'll walk you through the whole thing before and after the sale. And the seed they'll set you up with is good stuff. It's premium germination tested blends with zero filler. And their seed blends are built in Alabama, so you know it's going to handle southern conditions. So don't guess your way through another planting season. Go to whitetailhill.com/southern and use the code Southern for 10% off. And if you're not sure what to plant, ask them. Again, that's whitetailhill.com/southern and use that code Southern for 10% off.
If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy-to-see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy-to-read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex Apex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire spotting scopes. Or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to EuroOptic.com and enter code SOUTHERN10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.